I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So it is Beltane, true Beltane, which is exact mid-season, will be Saturday, May 4th at 5:12 p.m. in California for the Virgo part of all of us. But Beltane is one of the four cross-quarter holidays, Halloween, Candlemas, Beltane, and Lammas, called the Four Gates of Power, where power is especially eager to be invited into the world. Whoa, and we need all the help we can get. So Pluto also is stationing the principle of death, rebirth, so the portals are open and spooky. I like the dark humor of Pluto. Somebody on Twitter said, let's rebrand the student encampments as settlements. And it's like, oh, that's very good. We want some dark humor to the thing. But Pluto stationing is always a time for us all to gather to determine how it should go. Pluto says that is volatile, explosive, and dangerous in direct proportion to the force of its exclusion. So dancing with demons is called for. Venus in Taurus, at 4 Taurus, which is the image for that is widow weeping at an open grave, squares Pluto, reminding us all of, again, you know, our expanding definition of community to include everything, participatory animism. Jupiter and Uranus conjoined in Taurus, say the guiding Earth stories are bubbling up out of the Earth. And so Pluto is all about how shall, in Aquarius, how shall we gather so more than perfectly. It is bewildering journey to rewilding, borrowed from guest. We are welcoming Sean Patrick O'Donohue. Encore, encore, encore again. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you. So good to be here.
That's great. And his website is otherworldwell.com because he does so many great things, including we have something coming up on Monday and then another council that we will announce with his ally, Jesse Wolfe Hardin, conjurer of the Good Medicine Confluence, goodmedicineconfluence.com. You know, and his bio is most impressive and would take the whole hour to read, but here's just little bits of it. Wolf writes, I came to herbs through my early organizing of Earth First. Yes, I used to host many Earth First people, we'll talk about that, and work with animus from Terry Tempest and Metzner to Oberon Zell, and all of that. Jesse Wolfe Hardin is, he said impactful author, but I changed it to influential because that's part of my thing, is an influential author, ecosopher, ecological and societal activist, personal counsel, graphic artist, musician, historian, champion of both human and biodiversity, as well as of nature's medicines, was the leading organizer of and presenter for Earth First, yes, becoming a featured presenter at hundreds of conferences and universities, was the creator of cross-cultural eco-spiritual collaborations, appropriately called medicine shows, that melded his powerful spoken word with live music, indigenous presenters, and focused activism. He co-founded the International Good Medicine Confluence in 2008, and it's coming up soon in Durango in July. We'll talk about it. And it goes on and on and on. It's just fantastic. Welcome, Wolf.
Oh, what a pleasure. Thank you so much.
That's good. Well, it is time, you know, for all of the anarcho, entheo, astro, animists to converge, you know, and endogenous indigenuity, endogenous anarcho, entheo, animism. We put it all together. So, yes. And, you know, absolutely. I'm so delighted to meet you. You and Sean have been allies for a long time, and that was a clue going, let me check this out. And when I went to the Good Medicine Confluence website and then listened to your video, I'm like, oh, very, this is it. This is how we should gather. What a good ally. You know, that's wonderful. So, so maybe just, you know, let's start off guiding us a little bit to the confluence, the Good Medicine Confluence in Durango, Colorado, that will be July 10th through 13th in Durango. Inspiration, herbal education, impassioned celebration. How do you want to just unfold a little bit?
Well, you know that we call it a confluence rather than a conference.
Yes.
And so even though there's over 100 classes and in depth and every manner of addressing every manner of healing from herbs to emotional to the to the healing of this ever more divisive society. So all of that comes together like little tributaries of like the river I live on right here in this wild canyon. And as they come together, they excite, they don't just add to the amount, but they like add this quality, this feeling, just like when you're creating a tonic of medicine, or when you're creating a beautiful song and you have to get all of the instruments in just at the right time and just the right volume. And so this is a confluence, not a conference. And in fact, I don't even think we qualify as a conference, since we spend more time dancing on the tables than sitting in front of them talking.
No, I love that. I loved everything you said in the video and everything you just said now, going, yes, how do we gather? How do we gather? Because it's a time of reinventing everything, right? And, you know, I've been to many conferences lately, and I go, yeah, confluence, more fun, more better, more nature word. The confluencing of allies, because that's really what you're pulling together. And Sean, you've been working with Wolf and with the Good Medicine Confluence for some time, and you will be presenting at this coming one as well. So what is your, how would you express your affinity for, you know, the ally-ness between you and Wolf, and also the Good Medicine Confluence?
Well, Wolf is someone who comes deeply from the heart, and whose heart is attuned with the heart of the earth and with all that's wild. And so we've been natural friends and allies since we first met. And even long before then, when I was in high school, I was reading his poetry in the Earth First Journal and hoping I would get to meet that guy someday. And as for the confluence, it is the one gathering I've been to, or the one regular gathering I've been to, where, not that it's regular, but the one recurring gathering I've been to, where I felt like all of my being is welcome. And, you know, there are so many people doing good work with plants, but a lot of people are learning primarily from books. And Good Medicine Confluence is where people who are connecting with the plants and connecting with the land directly and practicing with their hearts and their bodies as well as their minds, all come together. And so I remember you, Caroline, you and I took part in a well-intentioned gathering somebody was having online about psilocybin, and everybody was saying good things and trying to do good things, and we concluded the problem was they forgot to invite the mushrooms. And at Good Medicine, I find that all of the beings are invited fully.
That's great. And once years ago, I was at the Botanical Preservation Corps retreat or confluence in Veracruz, Mexico. Very trippy. Terrence McKenna was there. Very many, just whatever the thing is. But I said to my traveling companion, going, what a great group. Like, there's no dingbats here. And he goes, that's because they're all gardeners. And I go, oh, right. And it really helps a group. If people are working with plants, there's already a more egalitarian kind kind of dynamic. And I was guided to you, well, not only because Sean loves to present and go to your conference and speaks highly. And then the shout out to my fantastic Eclipse team, Priscilla and Polly. There we go. And I go, how did you meet Sean? They go, at the Good Medicine Confluence. I'm like, oh, let me check this out. You know, the gathering of allies. It's so important now. And then just a little bit, because I was bemoaning to Sean my quirky state of befoiblement, going, I'm sort of in a funk. But then I go, but the word funk is a Yoruba word that means the positive sweat of the ancestors. And it's like, okay. And then, you know, Sean, you were saying, it's bewildering. And it's like, right, it's a bewildering time, bewildering journey to rewilding. And it's like, that's it. That's the next council we're going to hold starting on Monday. We'll play with that. But I have what you wrote, Sean, because it's fabulous. But if you'd rather read it yourself, do you have what you wrote in front of you?
I don't, and I never know what I've written after I've written it, or what I've said after I've said it.
Oh, that's great. All right, well, let me just tease this. So It is, we all need each other, right? Because I was in such a deep, deep place, and Pluto, and, you know, someone in my family very dear to me is in hospice hovering, and it's like, whoa, the gates are open, and I feel on call, and it's windy, and woo, and it's a bewildering and funky and everything time. And it was, talking to you was so wonderful, right? When we're, you know, it's time to come out and meet our kin. So Sean said, "Oh, you're bewildered." I'm like, "That's it. I'm bewildered." And we want to be bewildered. We'll explore more of this to rewilding, Beltane to solstice. It's the courtship to the wedding. And here's what Sean wrote. He said, "Genocide, climate change, burning forests, rising fascism, and the daily struggles to survive weigh on our hearts and our minds. We move through grief and fear and anger into exhaustion that leaves us in a fog, a daze. And in that daze, we are bewildered. And bewilderment is exactly the right place to begin. For to be bewildered is to find ourselves outside received stories, outside other people's plans and agendas, in a wild and unknown place. And it is in this presence of wild things that we remember our own true nature and our own possibilities. We can begin the conscious process of rewilding. Join us as we work with the guidance of the plants, the animals, the fungi, the stars, our ancestors, our descendants, and each other on a journey from bewilderment to rewilding." Yeah, open to everybody by donation Monday night, May 6th, 5 p.m. West Coast, 8 p.m., whatever. More information at coyotenetworknews.com, and that will then be the beginning of our bewildering council, right? But what we talked about also is I remain completely enthused by this book, The Dawn of Everything, by David Wenbrough and David Graeber. David Graeber, they spent 10 years writing this book. He died 3 days before it was published, going, "Ooh, there's a Pluto dark humor." But it's a guiding text, and it's part of what drew me to Wolf, because it's the history of human engagement and the pulse between authoritarianism and hierarchy and egalitarianism in myriad forms. It's just a fantastic book that I want everyone to read, and we're going to use it as a kind of text for our council. But whether you join us or not, you know, really, you know. So anyways, that was beautiful, powerful, Sean. That was so elucidating and wonderful and, you know, and bewildering and guiding, going, right, because if we have the words and we feel like the journey we're on, like, oh, it's alive, and we cooperate with it, there we go. So, yes. And then let me just hand to you both with the guiding, beautiful sky story, which is always, I mean, I always turn to it as heartening, because astrology can be descriptive. The word disaster means against the stars, when we pit our small will against the larger pulse. And the healing antidote word is consider, which means with the stars. We gather now to consider in order to avert greater disaster, right? And so as we're convening now, the sun in Taurus, incarnational realm of sensuality, you know, quintiles, 72-degree angle to the moon in Pisces. Ooh. They are in harmony. And it just says, available to all of us is irresistible eloquence on behalf of what we love. And my friend Sylvia always points out that the quintile is also the capacity to open portals between worlds. I'm like, well, now we're talking. And if it's not true, let's make it true. So the myths and the music are eager to be invited, you know, into the world. And, you know, a lot of what you do, Wolf, is really, you know, anything that we put on our altar of dedicated devotion serves as an invitation, right, as a template to kind of magnetize. So the now is especially honoring of your, well, and Sean's, and well, everybody listening's dedication, right, which is, you know, the powerful poetry, may it, you know, incarnate prayers of kinship and oneness. So do you feel, you know, you clearly through much of your life, and let's talk about Earth first for fun, but your dedication, you know, has kind of magnetized the journey, right?
Well, absolutely. And anything that you know to be true on a deep level that fits in with your value systems, with what your empathy and your intuition tells you. That's something to give to wholeheartedly and passionately, not just in the moment, but as a promise that you make to yourself, to the spirits, and to the earth. And that's right now is a time of necessary promises. You know, it's not good enough to just virtue signal, to just talk about nature or egalitarianism or anything else, but rather to find a language that makes that real in our lives, to where we actually put our butts on the line. That's what this is all about. We can't have an ecstatic experience or have any chance of holding back the destructive paradigm without that deep of an engagement and that strong of a promise.
Yeah. And Earth First, that's great, because and years ago when I hosted some Earth First people, and I like your conference, I love this show to be an invitation for all of everyone to show up. And so the Earth First people, again, it's back in prehistory, that, you know, at first we're kind of but then, you know, as I brought in animism, they were like, well, actually, yes. And they said, if you yarn a tree, which is sort of like turning the tree into a prayer stick, we always, as we yarn it, and yarn is the thing that will defeat chainsaws, right? So as we yarn it, we put our blessing into it so that whoever cuts that yarn is filled with that blessing, that they no longer harm the world. Anyway, and so yes, I like indeed. That part of them came forth, right? Does that hum with yourself?
Absolutely. I mean, I think the vision of Dave Foreman and a few of the others that first, you know, thought of Earth First wasn't nearly so atomistic, but then very quickly, whether they were comfortable with it or not, the idea of seeing all of life in the universe, not just even on the planet Earth, as something that's equal to us and, more importantly, connected to us, that theme is so ancient and so powerful, and that quickly became the overriding ethos of Earth First, not just putting our bodies on the line to protect wilderness, but rather to find the wild in ourselves, that connection within ourselves to all that matters.
And then just to put everything on our altar of dedicated devotion, so some years back, I apologize, I've forgotten her name, wonderful, wonderful Earth First person. They were doing an action, you know, in Texas, and she found out later that the FBI sent an undercover agent customized to appeal to her as a lover, who became her lover, you know, like likes country dancing or this kind of look or whatever. And it was that guy, the FBI guy, who was like, oh, you guys are wimpy. Let's do, you know, let's blow up the Transformers. And they were like, well, we're not sure. Well, okay. And they all went to prison. And what we just put on the thing, the guy or Gaia who recommends violence is the FBI undercover agent, even if they're not, right? Just as a working principle. I kind of like that thing. Embodying.
Well, there's always confusion that property is somehow can be, you know, compared to in any way whatsoever to life. And so we're really talking about the destruction of property in Earth First as a necessary strategy. Not everybody in Earth First agreed with that by any means, but that's what gave the feds the hardest time. That's what they had their hardest time wrapping their heads around, really, was how can you not value the infrastructure? How can you not value, the technology that makes all of life, modern civilized life possible? And, of course, the Earth First point was that there's, you know, we're destroying the natural planet. We're destroying the capacity for even humanity to survive through the coming generations. And, therefore, we cannot put property on an altar, nor the property owners and the corporations on an altar. That's where the stance has to be made.
Yeah, but everything evolves, right? And one of the things, and I'll toss it back to Sean, just in the dance, not that we need astrology, it's just backs up what we already know, but Mars, woofiness, has just moved to it into its own sign, Aries, woof, 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 but with a quintile, to Ceres, Demeter, dwarf planet, goddess of the Earth. So it's the repurposing of Mars. So it's not so much boom, boom, or even righteous tantrum yoga, you know, or blowing things up necessarily. No, really, it's like, okay, that was there, but we were moving beyond that into really the realm of the green man, the Dionysus, from whom, after, you know, backstage is called the green room. I owe this to Catherine Neville's research in Greek theater. Backstage is called the green room because it was sacred to Dionysus, the green man. So every actor, regardless of their role, hero or villain, spent time in the green room dedicating to the flora and fauna of the earth before they went on stage, right? And that's very you, Sean, right? I mean, you live in the green room, right?
I try to. Every once in a while, things start to get gray, and then I need to bring the green back again.
Yes.
And there's so much, just, you know, hearing what Wolf was saying right now, I think about late friend and ally of mine, Philip Berrigan, who would always say that the definition of property is that which is proper to life. And I think that it's important for us to reconceive things in that way. And I also look at this current moment right now and at so many voices rising up. So inspiring to see so many students putting themselves on the line right now. And I also remember in those situations the temptation to be reactive. And yesterday I was listening to journalist Ryan Grimm, who was giving what I thought was the very best message I've heard spoken from the world of journalism to the movement, which is, remember your nonviolence, not in spite of the violence you're faced with, but because of the violence you're faced with, because this is what we're bringing forward. This is how you can show what's being brought forward in a different way. And so in the green room, we reconnect with the green world that's breathing life into us. And we remember that deep kinship and that deep loyalty, and that we also can learn from them. As I think of the spiritual, that says, like a tree that's planted by the water, we shall not be moved. And so if you are choosing to stand where you need to stand, be like the tree by the water. Root deeply, drink deeply, celebrate the sun and the stars, and just allow yourself to be that presence there.
That's great. Yeah, and just things I carry in my, you know, just like pebbles in my pocket, you know, the wonderful tale of Teresita, great medicine woman of Mexico, and her Aztec granny is saying, it's especially good for us all to do this now. I mean, always, but now. Her Aztec granny says, feel roots growing out of your feet, Teresita, deep, 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 deep down into the earth. And Teresita says, does this mean I can't be hurt, granny? And her grandmother says, no, child, we all get hurt. It means you can't be overpowered. It's like, oh, this is really good. You know, which is what you're saying. So everything can be imprisoning or liberating, and to react to anything is not free, but to cultivate an ever-expanding repertoire of responses really guided by nature's ingenuity is to ally ourselves with nature's evolutionary dynamic. And that's what I find so exciting or enthusing, the re-enthusing of your both of your work, Sean and Wolf, which is like, let's expand, you know, our repertoire of responses, you know, you know, it's like the great movie Enemy of the State, right? In which the Gene Hackman character says to the Will Smith character, like, they're large and lumbering, you know, we're small and agile, their strengths are their weaknesses, right? So it's like, oh, right, you know, again, an ever-expanding repertoire of responses. And just to offer back to you both, my working with indigenous animistic activists goes way back to Big Island, Hawaii, and my friend Pauahi, when there was a bad project planned in the Virgin Forest. And so they gathered together and invited Pele to express her opinion, the volcano goddess. And every time the up to no good, bless their misguided hearts, engineers tried to lay a foundation, lava erupted. And they were like, we studied this. This shouldn't be happening. Let's do it again. And they did it three times and then tiptoed away going, whoa, there we go. And, you know, with the Council of Unreasonable Women, you know, there was a bad plan to bury nuclear waste at the foot of Yucca Mountain. You know, and I said to the Council of Unreasonable Women, we were just forming then, you know, let's invite Yucca Mountain to express her opinion. And some of them are, we're activists. We don't. It's like, oh, come on. Come on. And they're like, okay, we did. The next morning, earthquake at the base of Yucca Mountain. She expressed her opinion, causing the plan to be canceled. And many such things, you know. The Uwa people of Colombia threatened with Standard Oil drilling, and they were like, oh, we're going to kill ourselves. No, wait, we remember our ancestors knew ritual, and they did serious ritual. We're still picking up our dormant skills. And they invited the oil to hide, and Standard Oil did three drills, came up dry, and went away. So can you think, Wolf, that part of the good medicine confluence is like who brought what? You know, what has worked before, and if we don't know what to do, invite in what does. Is that part of your enthusiasm?
Well, absolutely, and it's certainly not an activist gathering, and yet almost everybody there takes an activist stance in that they try to make active and real in their lives whatever it is that they deepest believe in, and you know those beliefs are quite varied, but they're all life honoring. And it's the idea of a herbal event as a place to learn about herbs. Yes, well, we have tons of how to learn about using herbal medicine for different conditions. But it's really about what is the medicine that you bring to this necessary healing? And how does that healing go beyond just the healing of our bodies to our damaged psychologies that Sean talks about all the time? The healing of the earth itself, as he also talks about. The healing of societies that's so fractious and divisive and hateful right now. So healing, we're not calling for activism per se, but we're calling on everybody to be real with what's most important. And what's most important now is not just valuable as it was millions or hundreds of thousands of years ago, but rather because of what's going on with the world changes, it's vital, it's urgent. So really, and I would really like to point out about, too often it comes up in people's minds that somehow activism isn't spiritual, or that spirituality isn't activism, etc., or that protecting the natural world isn't progressive because it's not being just concerned with displaced peoples. But by including all of that, that's where the magic really happens, understanding that we can't heal one without attempting to heal at all. And activism isn't in confrontation with or in competition, with the spiritual dance. The dance needs to be as real as any activism, and everything you do in life has to be that committed, even if it's just, you know, a moment with a lover, a moment by planting a seed, a moment of touching somebody deeply who's in pain. And everything has to be that powerful. But also, we can make every form of activism and should make it a dance. So we're dancing our way. You know, we're not standing rigidly and conflicting with the forces. We're dancing. We're moving. We're celebrating. We shouldn't be in any battle with the dark and the evil without also making that one hell of a good party.
No, that's perfect. That's perfect. No, we're kin. I look forward to cahooting in perpetuity with both of you, really. Because that when people say I've been struggling with this issue for years, I go, well, what does it feel like if you replace the word struggling with dancing? I've been dancing with this issue for years. It's like, oh, there's some movement and rhythm there. And it's part of a dancing with demons kind of a dynamic. And yeah, and celebration and the spiral spiraling out of opposition. You know, John Michael Greer, worthy druid, says, if you want people to get nothing done but conflict, convince them they're on one side of something, and you will only get heat. What two needs is three, which is the unifying story. We're all in this story together. So we're going to take a very short musical break. Our guests this hour are wonderful Sean Patrick O'Donohue. His website is otherworldwell.com. He does so many great things, and we're going to do a great thing on Monday. You can find out more about that at coyotenetworknews.com. And Jesse Wolf Hardin, conjurer of the Good Medicine Confluence, goodmedicineconfluence.com. And the song that I've found, you know, again, it's all one story. It's all one story. So, you know, May Day as labor. Yeah, that's good. And May Day as nature. And let's put them together. And that's one of the things that Sean and I share, which is, you know, union, organizing, and animism. They're bringing these falsely estranged things back together. That's really great. So, you know, the Irish have often said that the Palestinians are the Irish of the Middle East. And so here's a song to honor that at our Beltane-ish time. Here we go.
In 1948, the natives were expelled from the land of their ancestors, their homes and city shelled, from the traitors in Transjordan to clandestine British demand, by the settlers' Zionist army that rampaged across the land. Oh, Palestine, oh, Palestine, we hear your desperate plea that once again across the land your people can be free. Oh, Palestine, oh, Palestine, your people live in fear. We demand from the river to the sea. In 1967, Israel did invade to conquer and to colonize what little had remained. The people of old Palestine once again their fates entwined with the Zionist occupation of their homes and weary minds. Oh, Palestine, oh, Palestine, we hear your desperate plea that once again across the land your people can be free. Oh, Palestine, demand your emancipation from the river to the sea.
There we go, and I realize, welcome back, team, to the Visionary Activist Show. I'm your Weaver of Context, Caroline Casey, and our guests are Sean Patrick O'Donohue and Jesse Wolf Hardin. We'll dive back in. And I realize with that song, it is possibly a skosh polarizing. There we go. But I remember Deborah Falmouth, wonderful ally who lives in Syria and Vermont, like you do, said, you know, salam, shalom is not the absence of conflict. It's the presence of oneness, right? Oneness. And we're all in this dream together. So this time of necessary miracles in which our rogue species is humbled. So we call in and go to the language that springs from the land. Aramaic is the language that everyone in the Middle East would have spoken. It's the vernacular of Jesus. And it's this earth-based, highly metaphoric language. And Neil Douglas Klotz, who has presented this to us, said, you know, blessed are the peacemakers. He said, that's pretty close. But in Aramaic, it would be, blessed are those who plant peace. It's like, right. So there's the song, possibly polarizing, including everybody. We want to animate the all-inclusive story and the necessary miracle of the community of the grieving, crossing all borders, and all of those things. But I just felt, I like the foot stomping and the rousing and the dancing and the emphaticness. And then maybe spiraling into more including everybody in the invitation in some way. I don't know. How do you feel about it, Sean?
I think you know, we have all these discussions about who does the land belong to, and it's the wrong question. The question is, how do we belong to the land? How do we make our orientation toward what the life of the land wants. And, you know, I hear people talking about two-state solution, and sure, that is a good bridge, but ultimately I'm in favor of the no-state solution. And yes, of and all people finding their way back into relation with the land, and also with all of the estranged aspects of the sacred, especially the sacred feminine that was at the root of all those traditions and got pushed to the edges.
Yes. Well, and the wonderful poet, again, alas, Rafar, Palestinian poet who was murdered last winter fall. But I used this with wonderful Greg Saris last week. Rafar gave a TED talk in which he is quoting from settler Native American, and the settler saying, you know, we own this land now, and the indigenous Native American saying, no one really, of course, owns the land. But if you say that you own this land, then what are your stories from the land? And he said, of course, the settler said, well, we don't have any stories. The stories sprung from the land. And yeah, again, the necessary miracle, and maybe you have something to spiral in, Wolf, you know, about, you know, the kinship from dedication to the land, the impossible necessary miracle magic. I was at the Goldman Awards last night in D.C., and it is a celebration of the best of humanity. It was just four extraordinary people who, against all odds, have done amazing things. I'll be, you know, telling the story, you know, more. The container was a little taming, just a little tame, but the content was fantastic. And again, these are people who did impossible things against huge tyranny from their love of the land, and it's so heartening, you know. So back to you, Wolf, in terms of anything that you might want to say. Was the song a little polarizing for yourself, or was it fun?
Oh, well, I'm too much a misfit to ever be polarized.
Oh, excellent. Excellent.
I can't be binary if I don't fit in anywhere.
That's good. That's good. Yes.
But I am saddened to see the degree to which, you know, everything from artists to herbalists are being asked to not just simply stand up for the rights of Palestinians, but rather to, you know, to not in any way whatsoever support anything that's Jewish. And so I know of numerous Jewish herbalists who feel like they are, and I feel like they are, connectors, wisdom yeah. keepers, that yeah. they put earth and children and life ahead of all else, and they're not in any way supportive of the militaristic Israeli government and regime any more than I'm supportive of the militaristic United States government.
Right.
But run by either party, it's still a corporate militaristic system. And so, but in what ways are we connected? Well, as a misfit, as somebody who's been actually lonely and often, you know, not even taking great, even when I was called lone wolf circles in Earth First, I still didn't desire to be lone. And then what happened was I learned I wasn't alone, because not only was I connected to the entire living Earth, but also to my species, not through a particular tribe, unfortunately, not through my lineage, since it's so convoluted, but rather connected to individuals in all these different cultures who held a common, dare I say, tribal view, earthen view, ecocentric view, and a sense of honor. And so those became my family. And now I keep this good medicine conference going, not just to help agitate and stir and inspire, but also because it feeds me. It is has become my family.
Hmm. And it is so crucial to how shall we gather in non-authoritarian ways, because you're doing that, and then just for us all being proffered by the so generous guiding astro story, as Pluto is stationing, there's metaphors for each degree of the zodiac. Its image, it really wants our attention, is deserters from the military following their own wilderness path. I go, well, let's animate that. Let's spiral that out. Let's, you know, against all odds, impossible things. Let's have the military put down its weapons and each person in servitude to that, you know, to follow their own wilderness path. When Aaron Bushnell self-immolated on the steps of the Israeli embassy in D.C., he was born when Neptune, his vision, his dedication, was at 2 Aquarius, deserted from the military, following their own wilderness path. And it was a horrific sacrifice. But Pluto, now stationing there, says, well, let's honor the sacrifice of him and so many, you know, by spiraling that out, the invitation. And there are good people doing amazing things. You know, there's weird projects in the heart of the Pentagon to put prayer mandalas in the, I mean, you know, it's like there's allies everywhere in unexpected places. And that invitation, right, to cross borders and then with our wizard witch brooms and whatnot to dissolve the borders, like cross the borders. And well, yeah, you speak of the loneliness of the perspicacious person, right? And that's why ally in a glance, it's good to gather. But beautifully what you said, you know, kinship with the earth. And there's, again, a great conversation wanting to be had, you know, for all of us that we dedicate to being cultural agents on behalf of what we love and what we are in nature. And then, Sean, you had been mentioning in the wonderful rope of poetic words you lowered down into my pit, in which I could climb out. You mentioned the herb vervain. Do you want to bring vervain in, or anybody else who's clamoring to get in? But vervain, speak to us. Invite vervain into our radio council now.
Yes, well, vervain is so interesting. As I learned about vervain first from Matthew Wood, who connects so beautifully with the plants, but he was drawing a lot on the ideas of William Le Sorcier and of Dr. Edward Bach, who spoke of vervain as the medicine for when you are driven so hard toward your goal and you hold such high standards that you can't relax. You need to keep going, and you need to keep pushing, and you need to keep trying to go harder and harder at the standards. And so I've worked with vervain with people for that, those indications, for a long, long time. But then I was getting interested in, well, that seems to be a 20th century understanding of the plant, and 21st century, but origins of the 20th century. And when I reached back to Irish tradition around the plant, vervain was the plant that you brought forward on Beltane as you walked the perimeter of your land in order to hold off negative influences from the outside. And so I began to think, oh, well, maybe what vervain is doing for all these highly driven people is serving as a boundary of protection from the cultural influence that says we have to keep going no matter what. I remember another great activist hero and influence of mine, David Dellinger, talking about how upset he was when he heard another activist saying, this next demonstration is going to be what determines the future of the world, and if you miss it, it means you're not committed. And he said, no, 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 never say that. And how could you say that when part of your audience is a single mother raising her child who finally has a day off and decides it's time to take the child to the beach? That's what we're trying to make room for when we're trying to preserve life on Earth.
Right. Autonomy. Yeah, and many people go, you know, straight action, you know, not my thing, but this is my thing. But again, autonomy is a sacrament, you know, and that's that part of the dynamic of community. You know, everything Right. Well, the community, and again, why I rejoice at the Good Medicine Council and your work, Wolf, because I used to quip, I can be lonely on my own, but it takes a group in which to be alienated. Groups can be liberating or imprisoning, right? And so that idea of, the group where people are self-responsible, that's the Saturn part of Aquarius, in order, and it's the wolf coyote model. They are breeding now. I mean, my listeners know I often reference this, but let me do it again because I find it so useful for me. So wolves, I lived with a part wolf and a coyote for longer than I've lived with a human. It's kind of like a Chinese fairy tale. So wolves, the wolf model of leadership is fabulous. They don't operate on dominance, they operate on charisma, and the wolf is the leader, is the one that engages the playful ingenuity of the pack. So it's not just let's play, let's go hunting and everything, but playful ingenuity is a high criterion, and you can tell the wolf leader within 10 days of birth because it's the wolf pup with the lowest resting heartbeat, right? So it's the coolest, calmest wolf that engages the playful ingenuity of the pack. I'm like, I vote for that as a leader. That's great leadership criterion. And wolves play every 20 minutes, even when they're hunted or hunting. But it's a very disciplined pack. Everybody's got a job, you know. Coyotes, so very Saturn in the most positive sense. Coyotes, no, mad geniuses. The wolf would say, I see by the symbolism of the fence that the community would like me to stay inside, and even though I could leap it, I will. And the coyote would go, a door would be good for me here, and she would bite her way through the wall. But now they're mating. And I just want to, and this is why I was so enthused to encounter the good medicine confluence in your work, and always to cahoot with Sean, because it seems to embody this. I go, ooh, so wolves and coyotes are mating as a kind of evolutionary advantage, given the rudeness our species is imposing on everybody. So wouldn't it be great, right, to belong to and contribute to a wolf pack that encouraged everyone's mad, unique coyote genius? And it's like, oh, I love that. Because that's, I mean, does that resonate with yourself? Well, that's kind of what you're doing, right?
Wolf? Exactly. That's exactly what we're doing.
Right. So that's the way to go. Yeah, disciplined wildness.
Each person to get in touch with their own true nature, which is why I coined the word rewilding to begin with. You will often hear rewilding just used in terms of restoring actual wilderness. But when I first coined that word way back in 88, it meant to rewild ourselves first and foremost, and then rewild the world and our reality. But rewilding, as defined by me, was getting in touch with your true animal, creature, spiritual, magical, purposeful being. Get in touch with that. Get in touch with your instincts. They're still there. You know, they're not used. You might dismiss them. Get in touch with your creature instincts. Get in touch with your inner Neanderthal. Get in touch with your sensual, oversexed early hominids. You know, get in touch with what it means to be your true self, and then be self-empowered. Find your agency. Don't ask anybody permission to be you or to do what you know is good for the world. And so rewilding then is an opportunity, first of all, be yourself, and then to use that self in an individual, personalized way, to be a part of a tribe that where each and every person isn't marching to the beat of a drummer. They're all doing, it's like a samba. They're all making their own moves. They're all, grabbing hips and figuring out their own expression of what it means to be most alive. So then you can learn, what's my role? What's my niche? How can I be most effective in the world? But first comes with, who am I, and then delight in who that is.
So who is our inner Neanderthal? I took the DNA test, and I was like, oh, God, it's white, boring, boring. It doesn't account for affinity. I've always loved the Middle East. But it was white, white, white. But then, some percentage of Neanderthal is like, oh, that's refreshing, whatever it is. So how do you think of our inner Neanderthal?
Well, I use it metaphorically just to mean, before being perverted by civilization, by control. But certainly the Neanderthal is very interesting because I was just a young child when everybody was saying, all the scientists were saying that modern humans had wiped out the Neanderthal species because they were smarter, that they just killed them off rather than compete with them. And then now, of course, they're finding through DNA and through the advanced DNA techniques the degree to which they basically were bred out of existence. They're not out of existence, but bred into one being. And so even if it's only a small part, we contain, as we John's been saying too, all the elements of nature within us. Every possible element of nature lies within us. It's like we don't have one animal totem. All the animals speak through us, just one of them most loud. And one of the elements that we have is this earthen expression that's calling for us right now to find our song and sing it.
Nice. Right, and from Janine Benyus to 2 weeks ago, fabulous show, replayed, but so good. But she said, many people think that we as a species, that we sang before we spoke. You know, and you know, mm-hmm. I hosted somebody years back who had a great book on how insects taught us jazz. And it's like, oh, right, of course. And then our inner Neanderthal. So I don't know how many of us read, you know, the bestseller, slightly cheesy but really great book, The Clan of the Cave Bear, a million years ago. It is a little bit like Barbie and Ken in Neanderthal world, but there's some great plant lore in there. I don't know if you ever read the thing, but it's like the character Isla. She drinks the sacred psychoactive plant brew that only the men are supposed to drink, right? And she goes, whoa! And she sees the backwards and forwards in history of the Neanderthals. It's very well done. Anyway, I just wanted to bring that up for fun. It is Barbie and Ken in Neanderthal world, but there's tremendous plant lore. Yeah, and then just as a little thing, it's a great, you know, Jean Owl, who was unknown, and you got this little publishing thing. But part of which, and then it was a humongous bestseller and went on. But she said, manners. You know, when her book was being published, she went to the factory, you know, where it was being printed, and she thanked each union member. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And it's to that she attributes the hugeness of this unlikely and then likely bestseller. And I just go, right, manners. Because, you know, Sean, you're a great keeper of the manner of how we approach plants, and Wolf, you're speaking of, I mean, any community, it does require Saturn and Uranus that each person be self-responsible to the group. And in order to, you know, dedication is freedom, right? And discipline is freedom, this complex dance. So, because you're attracting herbalists, do you find you're gathering mostly self-responsible people? And it's pretty skookum?
Well, almost completely at this point. Anybody that is more of a normie probably is turned off by it at this point. Anybody that's accepting of control, status quo, has anybody that doesn't believe in the power of discovery and of being different and real, it just isn't going to come. It's now drawing the exact kinds of people that make me feel most at home. And that's what I hear again and again from them, is that, you know, I feel seen for who I truly am, accepted for who I truly am, besides without having to fit into a certain box. Or they say, I feel like I've come home. I didn't realize I didn't have a home, but now I have found my home. And really, that's that's what I live for at this point.
That's wonderful, you know. And those of us, you know, who live, well, we connect with the world and everything, you know. But all of us are alone too, going, ooh, I mean, I live mostly with animals, right? And then connect, here we are, and out and about. But that's why I think the finding the convivial form of gathering is so.
You talked about weaving. You're known as what, weaver of context. Right. It's all about the warp and the weft. It's totally all about that. And because something's truly woven together, then when they go back home to their individual places, and these are folks from not only across the country, but from several different places in the world. And when they come here, that's like they're making a connection. They are being woven together into a plate that cannot be separated by mere space or time. And so they're allied. They stay in contact. They're still an inspiration to each other and actively friends with each other, creating new ideas and new plans for how to remake this world.
Right. Well, and that's why Sean, that you know, those who love you, even last year were like, I don't know what this Good Medicine Confluence thing is, but you've been invited and you have to go, right? We were just ardent, and you did. It's like what we all want to, like, emerge and feel ourselves in relationship, that, you know, part of us does come alive. And when you have such great gifts to share, as you do, Sean, right? It's the to and fro, you know, it's the, you know, encountering people who really deeply appreciate your work, and vice versa, encountering people, then you would go, because it's very much who brought what. So it's a rhetorical question, right? So is this a replenishing gathering for you, Sean? Right. Anyway, what replenishes you when we were talking about wending our way bewildered?
Yeah. Well, what replenishes me is authentic connection, whether that be authentic connection with plants, whether that be authentic connection with stones and water, or whether that be authentic connection with human kin, living and otherwise. And what I love about the Good Medicine Confluence is that because everybody is showing up so fully as who they are, it's the responsibility is there because people are in response to each other, because people are fully present. And I find that there's so much beautiful mirroring and uplifting of each other, as well as the inspiration. It's like we breathe each other in deeply. We receive each other's words directly. We breathe in each other's scent directly. We share the air between our lungs directly. And it creates a true gathering, a true, truly embodied community. And then, yes, we become I feel like the Good Medicine Confluence is the fruiting body of a great mycelial being. And then when the confluence ends each year, we become the spores going out on the wind to bring that mycelium to root somewhere new.
Yes. Well, you know, what have we forgotten that we must remember? And I do always love from the learning of Stella Coyote and the Lakota elder saying, you know, we didn't hunt alone. Those were gifted, could broker a working alliance with the wolves and coyotes, and we would all hunt together for a season. And this is something that humans must not forget, right? To broker our treaties, our alliances across species borders. All too soon. Well, let's think of this as a part one cahoot. Jesse Wolfe Hardin, influential author and ally forwards and backwards. Again, goodmedicineconfluence.com. And thank you always, Sean Patrick O'Donohue, otherworldwell.com. I'm Caroline Casey. You can go to coyotenetworknews.com for our Monday cahoot with Sean and me. And thanks always to Kirsten Thomas. And we will reconvene next week. Thank you, team.
Thank you.